We sing.
Tom, the music means we're going to take a break. I don't believe this first hour has gone. The callers are lining up with some very, very incredible questions for you. Let's take a break for the 11 o'clock news.
Okay.
And we'll be right back right after. All right, Tom, you want to talk to them, and we'll talk about free energy a little bit later, okay?
Okay, fine.
All right, let me give the numbers for those that do want to get in and talk to Tom, because particularly I'm interested in you calling in if you've seen these strange weather patterns that Tom has talked about. The two-thirds of a circle formed in the sky with about 5 miles in diameter with long, thin clouds extending out in a radius from it, like a radio formation. If you've seen those around the Los Angeles area, we would like to hear from you. The numbers in Los Angeles...
Starter, I just wanted to say, when you were mentioning about the walking on fire,
yes,
that you didn't say, kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah, don't do that at home.
Okay.
That's very important.
Very important, because it takes a lot of mind... exercising and attitude straightening and a lot of things to get that done.
Yeah, and that sounded very interesting. This really isn't a question. It's more or less a statement. You know, you were talking about you were interested in people that might have seen those formations in the sky.
Yeah.
I bet you a lot of people have seen those, but they more or less just passed them by as like jet streams or, jet exhaust. Would that be possible to mistake them for something like that or formation jet exhaust?
Well, what you'll find is people see it and they say, gee, what an unusual cloud.
Right.
And they don't think that much about it because we don't normally go around looking at the clouds and trying to compare this cloud with that cloud to find out what types of cloud are in the sky, you know, what the normal types of clouds are. And so we have other things on our mind, and after a while it just fades away. We remember we saw an unusual cloud and that's it.
Yeah, I'm really amazed by what you're saying. As a matter of fact, it's the first time I've heard about this. My next question was the documentation to substantiate your claim. I've never seen it, or at least I've never heard, Dr. George giving the weather saying we might have scattered rain from the Russians or anything. Now, you were saying that you're going to be making a paper or whatever it may be. How much of the public on a percentage do you think actually knows about this?
Well, I'm sure I don't know on a percentage basis. I can tell you what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
I'm trying to make it as public as possible. At John Ratzlaff at Tesla Book Company, and Bill will give you the address, I'm sure.
Sure.
Maybe we can give it on the air here.
Certainly can.
I've written a series of papers on electromagnetics, and the part four that John publishes, I gave some of the mechanisms by which this stuff occurs. And just at the end, I mentioned the weather engineering. Now, the next paper will be on weather engineering by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to do is make the stuff public so that everybody does know about it, and then maybe you will tune in and have your local weatherman make a comment on it.
In Tom's previous papers, Dave, you'll find a rather detailed description of the scalar wave, how you can make your own scalar wave transmitter, in fact. And I would recommend that you write John Ratzlaff up there at Tesla Book Company. You have that address at the tip of your fingers. I know it's on...
Yes, it's Tesla Book Company, 1580 Magnolia.
Right.
And that's Millbrae, California, 94030.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think you're really doing a service to the American people. More people need to know about this. This isn't something that you read in the National Enquirer. You're definitely qualified to do this because, I mean, you can give an example and... your average Midwestern mentality, I wouldn't say, besides not caring about it, they just don't know about it. Or unless if you saw it, like if you were watching Family Feud and they were asking a question, you know, someone's altering our weather, you know, the person wouldn't go Russian, you know, wouldn't turn around and go, survey set, you know.
Right.
Russians, two people in the audience would probably say that.
Well, what happens, you do that, the eyes go to the top of the head, and they want to get on to the next soap opera, and it's sort of a sad commentary where media has led the American mind.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
yeah.
The Bill Jenkins Show is one of the few shows that will allow somebody to mention a subject like that and go into the detail that's necessary for you to understand it.
Yeah, I understand that.
Most of the people that will call you and ask for a comment on something like this will say, you know, give it to me in 3 minutes flat. And
right.
That's impossible.
You can't do that. Hey,
no.
I know you got a lot of other callers. I have one more question. You're talking about the Russians doing this as a possible offense or defense, whatever you call it. Can't this be used for countries that have extreme droughts to produce rain for their crops?
Oh, absolutely. The The fact that they weaponized this has nothing to do with the fact that the scalar technology has a marvelous array of things that can be done for the benefit of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to see is a widespread development of it for the benefit of humankind. In medicine alone, it can do spectacular things.
I would suspect, Tom, that this research was really generated out of a need to move weather in the Soviet Union into their agricultural areas. They've had a lot of trouble over there. They've had to buy a lot of wheat from the United States, and after they found out they could do it, they found out it was a weapon system and started playing with that, too.
Right, that's unfortunate, but it seems like that's what the more interest is in, rather than preserving life, destroying it. One last quote, put a little light on the subject. I was just thinking if the French did it, maybe it might start raining Perrier water. But it was nice talking with you, and you're very informative, and I've got your address, and I will be writing into that. I just wanted to say to all the other listeners that they should write in on this and be more to open to human beings like yourself.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. It's
very good. You have a good night now.
Okay, Dave, good for you. Randy, you're on.
How are you doing? Good evening, Tom and Bill.
Yes.
Okay, now I'm not an engineer, but I'd appreciate it if you'd recap a little bit. If you'd follow me while I frame this so that I understand it. Are you saying, in effect, that these transmitters in the Soviet Union send out currents that cross, in a sense, like an XY graph, and that those points can be plotted anywhere in the country or the world, for that matter?
Yes.
And at that point, that nodal point, these radio clouds form. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what controls, then, the distance in the atmosphere from the ground? How high? These, for example, you said you were flying over 35,000. You could see them below you. What controls that distance?
Okay, you've asked me one of the questions at the present time I do not know, and I don't mind telling you when you hit something I don't know.
All right.
I don't know how you control how high it is, how you get it out of the ground or up in the atmosphere and control the altitude. That I do not know.
Okay, now, my other question about that, with the incredible amount of general electromagnetic radiation in the atmosphere from everything from, you know, microwave ovens and, you know, ship-to-shore transmissions, everything, TV stations, wouldn't there be a breakup just from the enormous amount of EMR that would cause all these clouds to sort of scatter rather than have a coherency to them?
Well, from the normal stuff that you get, by the way, there are scalar currents in the Earth, and it's my theory that the normal striations that you get in great number in large masses of clouds are caused really by interactions between the scalar currents in the Earth and resonance with the clouds. I think the Earth is already doing scalar weather engineering.
Naturally formed?
Naturally.
Naturally.
But I think that these particular signatures and the things I'm talking about here are abnormal. They are unnatural. They are man-made. And certainly the adjustment in of the network was picked up and detected here in this country. And,
yep.
And the fact that these little virtual transmitters exist throughout the country, that fact was picked up and measured by the people who are out there in the field measuring it. And they reacted to that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So certain parts of this thing were detected. And the rest of it you have to piece together like piecing a jigsaw puzzle together. But if you do know something about the scalar electromagnetics, then it all makes sense. It all adds up, and then you see the signatures in the sky, and you know what you're looking at.
Now, the system the government was going to set up, the Pentagon, to transmit across, I don't know, seven states to the oceans to control the submarines?
That's
is that
a normal
similar?
ELF type transmission. Yes, we know that normal ELF will, that's extra low frequency. You know, you get the frequency down very low.
Right.
And by very low, we might mean 30 hertz, for example, you know, somewhere in that region. 60 hertz, 50 hertz, 30 hertz. If you get down to that region, we know that wave will go through the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The normal electromagnetic wave of that frequency will go on down through the ocean to the sub. Now, the problem you have there is you don't have very much data rate. It takes you forever to send a message of any length to that submarine. And so, you know, what people would like to have would be something up in the megahertz band where you can send a message very quickly.
Now, we abandoned that project, as I understand, because different local governments were complaining.
I don't think we've abandoned the ELF at all.
No, we haven't. It's running full tilt.
Oh, I thought a number of states were absolutely opposed to having it run across their line.
Well, certainly that's been true. That's correct. But the project is still ongoing.
I see. Now, what about the U.S. intelligence community? Do they not even look at these items? Or do they and simply are mute about it?
Okay, that's a very important point that you raise, and let me address that just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The intelligence analyst is, let's say he's an electrical engineer, or he's a physicist, or, you know, a technically trained person, but his training is from the orthodox scientific community. Now, scalar waves and scalar technology does not exist in the normal textbook, nor is it taught at the normal university. Okay, if you have one of these people or a group or an agency that gets interested in this area and says, maybe there's something to it. Now, they're spending taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they have to do, they have to turn to the orthodox scientific community. They try to turn to the best people they know. And they say, tell us about scalar electromagnetics so we can train our analysts and so they'll recognize the stuff when they see it. And the orthodox scientific community doesn't have scalar electromagnetics in it, so it says there is no such thing. It is all a bunch of hooey. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
exist.
They think you're a nut in this whole
well,
theory.
Well, of course.
Is fraudulent.
You know, that's a kind word.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, the intelligence analyst then, since he's spending taxpayer money, is certainly not going to go against the expert advice that he gets from the scientific community. And by the way, justifiably so. I'm on his side in that thing, even though it goes against me.
Can't blame him.
That's right. He would not spend taxpayer money on every will-o'-the-wisp that comes along. What I'm trying to do is say that this is not a will-o'-the-wisp. This is real. It's there. It can be measured and can be detected if you build the detectors. And I can tell you enough about it so that you can go in the laboratory and start developing the detectors and so that you can actually build some of the effects and see that it's real. And then you take over from there.
No,
so that's what I'm trying to do, and it has to be attacked in this fashion so that enough of the orthodox scientific community changes, then we'll have the intelligence analyst change, and all of a sudden intelligence will be full of it.
Is the orthodox community looking at this now? I mean, do you have any people?
Some parts of it are by people who are being very careful that their scientific reputation doesn't get ruined. In other words, they're doing it in secret.
Yeah.
We have a lot of private citizens that are working on it, Randy, all over the country. Some of them that are in government, but they don't want to, are in academia, but they don't
they can't
want
to acknowledge it publicly.
They don't want to disperse their reputation in case it goes wrong. But nevertheless, they're sitting out there and beginning to work on it. And Tom is one of the men who has enough to him where he can stand out there on the limb and nobody's going to saw it off after him because his word is pretty good.
Well, I appreciate
the main advantage, you know, being very honest, the main advantage I have is that I really don't have any orthodox scientific reputation. Nor do I have any that I have to establish or defend. And I'm perfectly willing to live by the laboratory experiment. If the experiment keeps showing that we can have this kind of wave and we can have these kind of effects, then the scientific method says you have to change the theory. Now, if the experiments do not show that, then what I'm saying would be wrong, you see. And I'm perfectly willing to abide by that. That's called the scientific method. That's the way we ought to do it.
So you need general support within the scientific community willing to look at these data and willing to at least consider the possibility of changing their whole framework.
Yes, one of the problems, you see, is that nobody in the scientific community, no source of funding at the present time that I know of, is going to fund this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I'm able to do a little bit of this kind of work in my private life is because I'm able to make a decent living at another kind of skill and pay the grocery bill with that. And I'm able to afford to do a little bit of this in my private life. And so I do what I can.
He does
a lot. If we ever get it being believed, we will have funding sources and we'll have a lot of work done and we'll have a lot of progress real quick. And that's what we've got to get to. We've got to get it into the universities.
I'll be following this. If you can just touch on one more thing, I'll let you go. When you talked about the storms in South California last year that pounded Malibu, tore down the houses, people were saying that this is something that happened 200 years ago, I think it was, a number of meteorologists were speaking about that this is a natural occurrence, and the only thing that's unusual is that we haven't been around in terms of recorded meteorological activity to have that documented, but that actually all of these rains and the way that they actually came in much more onshore than before was a natural occurrence that is, in a sense, cyclical, but over a long period of time, and they explained it that way, at least most of the...
I thought it was an interesting explanation, being that it never been recorded before in the past. How do they know that it happened?
Exactly. Now, are you saying that they plotted, in a sense, the Soviets, assumingly, over California, these points, and then these points caused severe buildups of... Go on with it. You explain.
Okay, what I'm saying is they put radiation, waves, in a beam which has a certain width.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time that thing gets over North America, it's pretty wide. And so over the United States and Canada, they established multiple beams like this, interfering with each other. The interference pattern is that grid I was talking about,
right,
placed over North America.
Okay.
The one that I'm saying that a friend of mine and I saw sitting up in the sky, clear as a bell, right here over Huntsville, Alabama. Now, once they had the grid in and adjusted and got through with all the controls and the phasing and everything, at that point, they had a system set up where they could do weather engineering. Now, that adjustment did occur just about, they finished that thing about towards the end of February or so, or in the middle of February of 1983. And so they had that thing in place in time to influence the weather. Now, understand, they don't completely control the weather. They just influence and divert it. The more power they put in, the more diversion, the more influence they can get. And so that's what I think really happened. It's the degree of the storm you got and the misshapen path of the jet streams that's significant. It's not the fact that, you know, nature never produces a violent storm. Of course it does. And I don't think we saw any storms more violent than anything's ever been produced. We didn't see that. We saw the highest barometric pressure that's ever been recorded in 1983.
Well, they don't have a button that says rain and it'll rain. They can just
that's
move
right.
jet streams and change weather patterns, and we know how weather would ordinarily respond under those circumstances if you could put it in a bottle.
Well, listen, I really appreciate all the research you're doing, and I'll be following it. And thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Nice talking to you.
Okay, Tim, you're on the line.
Well, thank you, Bill. I want to thank both you and your guest for verifying the fact that I'm not crazy. Because I believe I've seen these patterns. It really struck me. I was driving on the freeway, and I heard you describe the cloud pattern as being like the old Japanese rising sun symbol.
Yes.
And I had seen that several times.
Whereabouts?
Well, I'd seen it in Iowa, just outside of Ames.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also seen it in Bakersfield. And the latter instance was in about, I would guess, August last year, which is odd for Bakersfield, you know, because it's not very cloudy there, but it's an agricultural area, and the same outside of Ames. In Ames, I saw back, I would guess, it was about March or April. And what struck me about it was how rapidly it appeared, you know, and in the Midwest, you're used to these odd weather patterns, you know, because the weather's real strange there anyway, but to see it in that perfect symmetrical pattern. And what I was wondering about was, is there any idea whether, like, animals have a sense of when this is going on or not? And I say this only because, you know, you've heard of these studies that say that animals, you know, can predict earthquakes and the like through their behavior. Because in both instances, you know, before I had noticed anything going on in the sky, I had noticed something with some animals that were around, you know, on the farm there, too. For example, in Iowa, we have a very large, you know, chicken house, and they just went berserk, literally. You know, just a frenzy of activity for seemingly no reason, and then suddenly I would look up and notice that here was this cloud pattern. And I was wondering whether they are more sensitive to these scalar wave-type vibrations than maybe humans are, or what, or whether you've noticed that in your research.
Yes, animals are more sensitive to scalar waves than humans. Humans react to it, but they react unconsciously. What they tend to do is change their mood. They get irritable, or they change their emotions, or, you know, they get all moody and all upset and everything. Or they develop some symptom like fatigue or a twitch or something like that. So humans develop, react unconsciously. Now, the animals are much closer to their unconscious than the humans, and so the animals react much more directly. Just as they react to the scalar waves emitted from the pressure just before an earthquake, they would react in an area where there's a very strong scalar radiation of this type. And I'm very glad you noticed that. That's a significant point.
Because, well, you know, I really couldn't help it because, like I said, I've always heard the animals are very sensitive to changes like that, but I have never seen anything like that. And not just, you know, when I was in Iowa with all the chickens, but when I was, you know, in Bakersfield and we had some dogs and some goats, and it was the same thing.
Well, take your camera with you and snap that thing if you see it again.
Well, my dog Briggs is with me all the time now, and if his ears go up, I start scanning the sky. I mean, I just never knew what I was looking at. I just, you know, put it down to to odd weather phenomena, like that one caller said earlier, most of us, we just don't know it. You know, we don't know what we're looking at.
Well, now we've got a tip-off from Tom, and let's keep our eyes open.
Oh, I will indeed. Now, you know, I thank you for opening my mind on this, and now maybe it'll open our eyes, too.
All right, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Tim. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
It's happening over in Iowa, too. We're going to be back with Tom Bearden in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins.
Tornadoes and floods and all of that.
We have Warren on the line. Warren, welcome aboard.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I'm interested in the receiver. I'm a graduate student at the University of California down in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And in our lab, we have a superconducting magnet that we typically run at 40 kilogauss, but it will go up to 80 kilogauss.
Well, then you're ready to...
Yeah.
Detect scalar waves.
Well, I'd like to talk with Mr. Bearden for just
sure.
a couple minutes about how I go about doing it. What it is, it's got about a 1.5-inch diameter bore, and it's about 15 inches long. That's the center of the magnet.
Okay.
And we'll run it for like 3 days at a stretch. Okay? Now, I'm wondering if I can use that to try to see these things.
With the kind of strength you can get out of it, when you get up to 40 kilogauss, which is the area you want to get to, that or higher, to get to some sensitivity, what you should try to do is this. Regard the detector that you're putting in there as just an antenna. It could be a straight piece of wire. It could be a coil or whatever. Just leave one end of it open. Don't put a closed circuit. Leave one end open. From the other end, run it to a tuned circuit outside the device. And that tuned circuit tuned to the frequency you wish to look to, resonant frequency.
About what frequencies would you...
Okay, the Soviet stuff is generally down in the communication band, so we're talking, you know, from 5 to 30 megahertz, although we've seen them going up above 40 megahertz. Now, I'll tell you this in advance, but I'd rather not discuss it too far. You're going to find intelligent signals, if you get it going right, that nobody knows exactly where they're coming from.
Yes, now...
But what you have to do to shield out the normal junk, you need a Faraday cage which will shield out the normal electromagnetics around the thing. So put the thing inside a good shield, like, you know, just a good copper conducting plate.
No, it's in a metal... It's in a metal door.
Yes, okay, that should be sufficient. Any good metal cage and ground the cage should give you a Faraday shield for the normal stuff. In other words, your normal TV station, your normal radio station, their waves are going to be grounded in that shield, and inside there you should have a silence zone. And that's where you want your superconducting magnet, and that's where you want the detector laying on it, and you can run the wire then out to your tuned circuit and run that to the oscilloscope and take a look at it.
Will these be observable about any time, or are they on?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing.
Will they be on any time, or are they on some of the time and off?
Right now, the Soviets are on some of the time, so keep monitoring. And if they cut back on, you can take a normal shortwave detector, and you can find out when the woodpecker's on.
Yeah.
And so you can look for correlations between the woodpecker and what you're able to detect on this. And keep changing your frequency. Sweep around with the frequency until you hit some activity.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the moment you detect something, if you have a well-shielded apparatus, you know immediately that you are not detecting normal waves because they're dying on the shield. And the only thing that can get through that shield is going to be the scalar waves. And so what you're looking at is a scalar wave when you see that on the oscilloscope.
Yeah, and it should
Now, let me explain, since you're technical, let me explain why this thing detects.
Okay.
When you have a magnetic pole, and I don't know yet which one is the strong one, which one is the weak one, but it's either the north pole is an increase in the intensity of the vacuum flux, or it's the south pole that's the increase. One is an increase, one's a decrease. And so from one to the other, you have a delta flux. You have an actual vector flux in the virtual state, that is, in the vacuum. You really do have a virtual flux. Now, what a magnetic field really is in the vacuum is as follows. It represents the circulation inside the electrostatic scalar potential. And from a position of high intensity flux, which means a lot of circulation, to a position, the other pole, which would be lower circulation, below ambient circulation, that's what a strong magnetic field represents. And it also represents a curvature of space-time. And if you have a horizontal vector, which is what a longitudinal wave, like a scalar wave, is, if you enter a curved space-time region, which is where you put your detector, to that curved space-time detector, bent at an angle in curved space-time to your longitudinal vector, the longitudinal vector now appears to have a transverse component, and that's what you're detecting. You're detecting a normal wave. In other words, the curvature of vacuum translates the scalar wave with respect to that detector into a normal Maxwellian Hertzian wave that you can detect.
Could I ask you just two more questions?
I want you to make them quick. We've got a lot of people lined up here.
Okay. You say it won't make any difference if it's just a straight wire going along the field.
Yes, it's just an antenna you're putting in there.
And the second question is, if I look at it randomly, about how long do you think would be a fair amount of time to look?
Oh, boy. Well, the physicist that built one of these things, that he wouldn't give me the exact construction details, but he shared with me the principle by which it's built, which is what I'm telling you.
He
did not give me the orientation, but he implied that as soon as he got the thing cranked up, he was getting signals all over.
Okay. Well, I'll give it a try.
But anyway, keep scanning around. I know the Soviet activity is intermittent right now, so you may come on in an off period, but you can tell that by listening on your short wave.
Mm-hmm. A matter of fact, for what we do, it should be obvious if it's there, because we'll more or less be doing that anyway in the course of our experiments, looking for something else.
Right.
Okay. If I find it, I'll call Bill.
Good. Good luck to you. I hope you find that thing.
Yeah, keep me informed, and I'll get it on to Tom.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
okay,
Warren.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Okay, we have Craig on the line. Craig?
Good evening, Bill.
Yes.
It's an honor to speak with you, Tom. Before you get away from us, could you give us an address if you'd be willing to correspond with some of us where we could reach you?
Yes, I can give you my post office box.
Okay.
My post office box is 1472.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Huntsville, Alabama, 35807.
Mm-hmm. Are you still putting out specula?
Well, I'm not connected with putting it out, but it's still coming out.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine is the editor now, Art Barrett, and they've been well behind, but he's just put out one, and he has another one in the hopper right now, which I've just looked at today.
Okay. I want to mention some things as fast as I can here that, for the skeptical listener, that pretty much prove what you've been saying. A little kitchen chemistry. You can produce your own standing waves in your house. To take a bowl of water, set them on the vibrating engine of your car or something vibrating, and after the vibration's just right, the ripples will appear to be standing still, like the strobe light effect.
Right.
And that's standing waves. And the same principle applies to air and radio waves.
Exactly.
And also, listeners might have heard the astronomers talking about radio interferometry. So, you know, interference patterns work on an astronomical scale, and not just in the laboratory, and they're already used by science. And from a laboratory scale to a large scale, they cover a wide range of things.
Yes.
And I believe I sent you a copy of February 82 Science Digest, page 80, for anyone that doesn't understand how the interference patterns can cause the phantom transmitters. It shows exactly how two sets of ripples come together and produce additional mysterious sets of ripples that would mysteriously appear. Also, the March 84 Popular Science has an article on holography where they mention they make a hologram of a magnifying lens. And that hologram can be used to magnify light, although it doesn't really exist. It's a phantom or virtual lens, but it acts the same way as a real one.
Yes.
And that ties in with what you're saying.
Exactly.
Also, you can prove that the electrostatic field affects water molecules, which make up the clouds, by rubbing a comb with tissue paper and holding against the stream coming out of your water faucet. You'll see it'll bend or deflect the stream of water slightly, and that proves that a static field can affect water molecules.
Yes.
But it's a long jump to modifying the weather, but it proves the principle.
Right.
So, another thing...
Craig, you make me feel so dumb sitting here.
Well, I'm just clipping articles here. It ties in with what you and Tom have been saying. Also, the Register, Orange County Register, 52083, has a complete article on the LIDA device, the Soviet little transmitter they set in a room, and it can tranquilize you with no wires hooked up.
We had quite a discussion on that one night.
Working at the Veterans Hospital in Loma Linda, and apparently it's not a secret that the Soviets have been using it for 20 years.
Yes.
So you're saying they're just using it on a large worldwide scale and more power, right?
That's correct.
So that's real.
A lot of people quit calling me an idiot the moment they got a hold of the leader device.
Right. Also, I was wondering if you could help any of us that would be interested in joining your network to monitor these signals around the country. I don't know anything about ham, but maybe some of the hams would be interested. Is there a way they can join up to your network?
Well, Craig, I don't have a network. I've just been operating independently and trying to share the information with everybody I can. I'd be happy to correspond with you and make you aware of papers, things like this, or send you copies of whatever.
Okay.
And if you find some of these signatures in the sky, please note the time, note the incident, draw a sketch or take a picture, and please write me a description. I'd very much appreciate it.
Last year I saw one, but I didn't have a camera in Orange County. A perfect circle is a cloud, thin cloud layer, and a perfect hole through the clouds about a mile in diameter. That's a little different than what you described. It's sort of the opposite.
Yeah.
But it was a perfect circle, and it lasted for a few minutes near sunset. And I also felt several of the earthquakes, which the Navy and the seismic centers denied were earthquakes. They denied there was no military sonic booms. It was a slow rumble of an earthquake, and that came out in the paper here locally. I felt them.
Well,
there
we've had a lot of those around here.
Recently, southern Tennessee all the way down to Florida.
Well, it's pretty unnerving knowing that ICBMs and all the nukniks are obsolete because they're both Brezhnev or whatever can push a button at the speed of light, send these energy pulses to zap us right in our beds without any warning or anything.
Well, you see, it's like every other weapon. For every weapon, there's a counter. For every measure, there's a countermeasure.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got to get our universities moving and our scientific community moving, and we'll very rapidly have countermeasures.
Okay. One other thing, you mentioned the firewalking. How does this explain any glass walking where these yogis walk on razor blades or glass or eat glass without being cut? Is that a different explanation?
Yes, I'm not aware of how they do that. I did see a voodoo dancer in Haiti one time eat a glass, and I was standing 6 feet from him. Observing extremely carefully, he was not doing any sleight of hand or anything. He took a glass off the table that my wife was drinking from, and he proceeded to eat that thing and chew it up with me watching the glass in his mouth on his tongue.
Mm-hmm.
He was never cut, nor was there any blood. And to this day, I don't know how that worked.
Okay. On February 10th of Science this year, they had a two-page article on Joe Newman's free energy motor, and I wonder if you knew him. He's down in your area.
Yes. In fact, during the last few months, I've been exerting a great amount of energy and all the money I could afford to spend to send tapes of that interview to everybody that had any power to influence that court decision, that court case he's got coming up. I've been sending tapes to, a couple of congressmen, to some pretty powerful people that have a lot of influence and things like this all over the country, trying to get some help brought to bear, some pressure brought to bear when his suit comes up in June against the patent office and trying to get his patent.
Mm-hmm.
And it is working, Tom.
Yes, it is. He's got three working models down there.
That's great. I have your part four of your book up, but there's no glossary of terms, and it's still quite difficult to understand the terminology and the scalar wave part. I don't have any little test for that to understand that intuitively for myself.
Yes, I'm working on a glossary, by the way, for the new edition of the Excalibur briefing, if I can ever get it in, get it out, which I should get it in pretty quick, and it'll be out about August. And I will have a glossary in the Excalibur briefing.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'll let someone else get on now.
Okay, Craig, thank you very much for your call. Craig, obviously, is a bright young man, Tom. He challenges us all the time. Yeah, Barbara just stepped in here.
Yeah.
Barbara.
Fascinating show. What happened to our winter this year?
Well, ask the Russians.
Yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying the early summer that I think started about the time that fall began last year, but I'm wondering what it's going to do to our crops and so on.
Who knows?
I don't know. Well, I'll listen to the program. The next 15 minutes, you may solve that problem, too. Well, I am going to be talking about some slightly different subjects. I think you know both of my guests tonight. Sandy Gooch, the owner of Mrs. Gooch's Natural Food Emporium, going to be in studio to tell us what we should be eating and what we shouldn't. Actually, her own life story is an interesting story, and maybe she'll share some of that with us.
I don't think she'll recommend eating a glass like...
No, I think... Well, actually, if it doesn't have sugar in it, it doesn't have processed flour, she might go for it. No, I don't think so. And then on our 2 o'clock hour, and I do know, you know Bart Ellis, who's been a guest of yours, but he's going to be wearing a slightly different hat tonight. He is a mental health professional. And he's going to be talking about his feelings about warehousing the mentally ill, as he calls it, putting folks who are schizophrenic in hospitals, and he says it's simply warehousing them. He claims he has a better method for training schizophrenics and other seriously mentally ill people that can get them mainstreamed back into regular life. So we're going to hear a bit from him.
Well, Bart's a very, very bright guy, and I hope somebody pays attention to his thesis there.
Yeah, well, I've enjoyed speaking with him on the phone about this. I have not met him in person yet, and I'm looking forward to that in the 2 o'clock hour.
Okay. Thank you very much, Barbara. Barbara Essenton. Be on right after the news at midnight for a whole night of kind of fun stuff. Barbara has a very, very good show. Let's go on with our callers. Tom Bearden is on the line from Huntsville, Alabama with us, and we have Carl wanting to know about the scalar waves. Carl?
Tom?
Yes, Carl.
I can barely hear you, but I'll go on. I've read considerable about Nikola Tesla in the past few years, and one of the measurements that he made was in a storm, the wave action, the electric wave action that went around the Earth, and he measured the amount of time and everything. And what I wanted to know was, is this in the same basic ELF type of frequency ranges?
No, Carl, it's not in the ELF, but the point you bring up is very interesting. Storms do produce scalar waves. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that produces ball lightning, the mysterious phenomena that used to be a fraud and now is accepted and known to be real, ball lightning, for example, is often produced because a cloud in the region and the ground or two clouds form a scalar interferometer, projecting scalar waves which, because of their randomness, form a sort of a circle. And you get a glowing ball of energy where the energy bottle is. And that's usually what produces the ball lightning from the clouds. Now, what Tesla detected in the Colorado Springs and caused a great deal of excitement when he realized what it was, he detected the waves from the storm, even though it was very far away, and he realized that what he was looking at was something extremely unusual. With his very agile mind, he immediately went from that on into the things where he demonstrated from Colorado Springs the fact that he could transmit a wave around the Earth and form a standing wave. If he had succeeded in finishing the tower that he was building on Long Island, Wardenclyffe, he would have given the world free energy with such a standing wave.
However, Wall Street did not like the idea.
Which is normal.
They figured energy was something to sell and something to tax, and so that ended that.
All right, I have two things I would like to find. One, there, in the last week or 10 days, there was that cloud formation over the northwest San Fernando Valley and in the Santa Susana Mountain Pass here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that will all these books and stuff be available up there at the Tesla Book Company, the paperwork and stuff?
The electromagnetic series that I've been writing is available there now. The earlier paper that I produced on the Soviet Tesla weapons is available there. I have a videotape that's available for me at the post office box that I gave on the Tesla weapons. And the paper that when I can finish this thing on weather control, it will be available from John Ratzlaff at the Tesla Book Company.
Okay. And I recommend giving him a call. That address, again, is what, 1580 Magnolia?
Yes, and that's Millbrae, California. Instead of your normal magnetic wave, and you understand the scalar wave was two opposed waves, the exact frequency, 180 out. Now, as you know, when you build a wave, you'll actually get a narrow bandwidth. And so you won't have just a single sine wave. What you should do with that thing is run it through a Faraday cage. The scalar comes out, the other stuff stays, the hash stays in. If you build a scalar wave and you find a resonance in that material anywhere, that material acts as a capacitor for the scalar wave. And you can charge the very atoms of the material itself up with this. This is an effect that Tesla noted also in an obscure paper. And you can get the mass and inertia of the object to change when you put a lot of charge, a lot of scalar charge into it that way.
Okay, Tom, well, keep up the work, and we'll try to do something down here.
Okay, right. And Bill won.
Bill won. Let us know about it.
Okay, I will.
Thank you, Carl.
Night.
Night. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I read a book a couple years ago called The Cosmic Conspiracy. I don't remember very much about it, but I remember it was dealing with Tesla and the work that he had done and the work that the Russians and the Americans had done from, you know, Tesla's original work. got into the VLF stations in Antarctica. Are these the same as the scalar waves?
Well, the ELF that we detect is a normal kind of wave.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're using normal detectors.
Uh-huh.
It's been my thesis for some time that, you know, hidden from the normal detectors is the scalar components, and that's what's doing the real dirty work. Mm-hmm.
But are there actually these stations in Antarctica?
I don't know about Antarctica.
Uh-huh. It also got into a project, Noah's Ark. Have you heard of that?
No.
That was supposedly put together back in 78 or 79. Under the guise of some presidential protection thing, and people were raising questions that this was dealing with these scalar or ELF waves on, you know, being able to control the weather in various areas of the world. But
I'm not familiar with the book.
It was put out by an Australian publisher, and it'd be pretty hard to get. But
I'd love a copy of it.
Yeah, in fact, maybe if I can get a hold of this, you know, I'll write Tom.
Okay, very good idea.
Okay.
All right, Dave, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And are you way up there in San Francisco area again?
Yeah, Mariposa, right. First of all, I don't want to be melodramatic, but I'm sure you know what happened to Wilhelm Reich, since you mentioned him before.
Yes.
I'm sure nothing like that will happen to you, but do you suspect that at some point the government may step in to try to kind of squelch the kind of publicity you're bringing to this area of research?
I don't expect any particular trouble from the government because, you know, so far they haven't really believed it, except in obscure places.
What I'm saying is when they start to believe it.
When they start to believe it, start to do something about it, I'll be very happy to shut up and let them do their job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another question. We know that you know, different frequencies in the normal electromagnetic spectrum have different applications. Would the same be true with scalar waves?
Yes, indeed. Such fantastic applications, it's very difficult to describe in a few words. For example, if you understand a Fourier transform, a Fourier expansion, you can represent any kind of a shape, a reasonable shape, or by a Fourier expansion. And by two Fourier expansions, like the interferometer business, you can represent a three-dimensional shape. So you can actually build a wave that will actually go inside, and if you want to resonate with one particular kind of molecule or one particular kind of atom, you can pick the complex of frequencies that we know about that are connected with one kind of atom, for example. And you can go in and you can hit that atom. You can reach down into the nucleus, because the scalar wave will go through the Faraday cage of the orbital electrons, go right on down into the nucleus. You can enter the strong force reactions that binds the nucleus together, and you can actually transmute the element into something else. You know, Curvrand was nominated for Nobel Prize in 77. He didn't get the prize, but he was a nominee, for proving that living systems can transmute elements. And, in fact, that's the way they do it. With a scalar interferometer they've got in their head, chickens, human beings, oat, wheat, barley, and everything which has comparable structures can actually transmute one element into another in a small fashion. And so you can do innumerable things. You can match almost any pattern and almost any shape and almost any interaction. You can bias the quantum level statistics. Instead of the quantum level being absolutely statistical, you can bias the statistics and change the probabilities in one way or the other. And so you can cause, you know, any change that you can get by changing the collapse of the state vector and having different probabilities than what you started with. And that's an enormous application alone, just by being able to do that with these scalar waves.
Is all this information presented in the material that you've got published with the Tesla book?
Well, I'm putting it out as fast as I can. Not all of this is in there, but the gist of all of it is in there. And some of the mechanisms, for example, are in that Part 4 paper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a paper now for the weather engineering. I have a rough outline, with some filled in, for the applications of a scalar theory of medicine, by means of which you should be able to do some rather enormous things in medicine. And it turns out that some of the older guys who were suppressed like Tesla did those things using scalar waves.
Mm-hmm. One last question. Your team, to me, this would also be very useful in the field of communication.
Indeed, because you can make waves that go slower than the speed of light, or you can make them that go faster than the speed of light. You can make waves that go through the ocean.
Mm-hmm. This is this is really kind of an endless vista here that you're opening up.
Well, that's what this show is all about, Craig.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I know you're about out of time, so I'll...
All right, Craig. Thank you very much for your call and getting
on the... Nice talking to you, Craig.
Sure.
On the line. We have time, mate.
He included a document that he claims was signed between the United States and Russia about 1970, and it was an agreement between the United States and Russia not to use weather-influencing machines as offensive weapons. I wondered if you had heard anything about that.
I know there are some kind of agreement. There is some kind of agreement between the Soviet Union and the U.S. in the field of weather engineering, but I don't know the gist of that agreement.
We know what the history of an agreement with the Soviet Union is. It means nothing.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, David, thank you. Tom, thank you very much for staying up late and electrifying us again with the Tom Bearden world.
Thank you, Bill. It's a real pleasure.
All right, Tom. We'll be checking with you later. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.